So I want to talk about when volunteers say no and how at that moment you can keep things moving forward. Now, I personally am so persuasive and so influential that when I ask someone to do something, before I can even finish the question, they immediately say yes. But for those of you that maybe struggle and have had from time to time a volunteer say no, this talk will be for you. And of course, I am totally kidding because I constantly ask people to do things and they turn me down. And I have a pretty high threshold for rejection. I've been rejected since I was a teenager, so I am used to it. That was not meant to be funny and not a commentary on my dating life, although when I was younger, I would call and ask a girl out and she would say no, and I would say, is your sister home? And so I learned very early in life how to deal with rejection, and so I am used to rejection. I've also been a pastor long enough to know that sometimes I ask someone to do something and they say no, even though what I'm asking them to do is in their best interest. So how many of you would agree that people don't always say yes to what's good for them? That is true. So people sometimes say no to things that will mature them, things that will help them, things that will grow them. And so we have to learn to deal with this rejection, see it for what it is, and learn, and here's my big thesis for this talk, that most no's are not dead ends, they're simply forks in the road. And so I want to teach you to know the difference between a no that is a stop sign versus a no that is a yield sign or a fork in the road or whatever it might be. Because one of the things I think we have to understand about what God has called us to do is that we are in the asking business. We must learn to ask. We ask people to do things. In fact, a long time ago when I first started teaching church planters, I tried to teach them the power of asking. What one book that I read one time called The Aladdin Factor, that those who are best at asking are those who are going to have the most success. And like many people, I have a fear of asking because I'm afraid they will say no. So I've had sort of a lifelong journey of learning to ask, willing to make the ask. I've learned biblically that my job is to ask, 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 and ask. And part of the reason I've had such a problem asking is because if you remember, the speech impediment that I had as a kid was cussigns. And so sometimes when I'm trying to say the word ask, it doesn't always come out. And so many times I've tried to make the big ask, and I've come across like a big ask. But hopefully those two sounded like ask. If not, we're going to have real problems with the rest of this talk. So I've had to learn the power of asking. So we ask, we ask, we ask, and then when they say yes, we equip, we equip, we equip. And that's really our job description. And here's what I noticed. The average pastor will stop when a volunteer says no. And that becomes the end of the conversation. The renegade pastor, the above average pastor, works to discern what that no really means. So what kind of no is it? Now, with apologies to the theme behind this song, there was a famous country music song called What Part of No Don't You Understand? Now, most of you know I love country music, particularly music, country music that was written prior to 1985. And there was a famous song, and I believe it was by a lady named Lori Morgan. And I will not attempt to sing it, but it's something like, what part of no don't you understand? Now, the problem with me quoting that song is the very next line of the song is, to put it plain and simple, I'm not into one-night stands. And I cannot be a proponent of that. I'm not into one-night stands. But the story, as the country song goes, is that apparently she finds herself in a bar, which we all know is the perfect place to meet someone who you're going to fall in love with and be committed to for the rest of your life. She's in a bar, and she is being hit on, I suppose, by somebody at the bar. She keeps saying no, but I suppose he is persistent, and he keeps asking. So she asks him, rather abruptly, what part of no don't you understand? And while everything else in that song is wrong theologically, psychologically, emotionally, She did get one thing right grammatically, and that is a no has parts. A no does have parts. There is a no, there is a no, there is a no, and there's a no. And so a no does have a certain part to it. And we have to discern what that no really means. Not when we're picking up people in bars. I mean, come on, that's not my point. But when we're asking people to do something that is good for them. Because, you know, a no in our world, and I'm very specific about in our world of asking a volunteer to serve, in our world of asking people to follow Christ, in our world of asking them to step up, in our world of asking them to be more generous, in our world of asking them to do spiritual things, people will often say no to what's good for them. And we have to work to understand what that no means. And then we have to realize that nobody grows until they say yes to the invitation to grow. And so if we're going to help them grow, we're going to have to ask them to grow. And we persuade, we learn this skill, we develop this finely tuned radar toward what a no really is because we care. Because we care. So if you were standing at the edge of a cliff and a car is running towards you and about to run off the edge of that cliff, how many times would you wave your arms and say, warning, there's danger up ahead? Would you do it once and say, well, I tried? Or would you do everything you possibly could to keep them from running off the cliff? Well, when we see that there's an opportunity for someone to grow, for someone to fulfill God's purpose for their life, for them to be all that God created them to be and Jesus saved them to be, we have to learn to persuade. We persuade not because of our own purposes or because of our own self-interest. We persuade because we care about them. And so we persuade, we motivate, we circle back around, we go back to it, we clarify, we rephrase, we try again later. We do all of this stuff because no one grows until someone says yes. And in the English language, with all apologies again to this country music song, within the English language, our language is limited. There really is only one word for no. Now, the Greek, the language of Koine Greek of the Bible, there actually are a couple of different words that are translated no. There's sort of the no transitional no. There's sort of the no dead end no, which is the word Paul used when he said, ask the rhetorical question, shall I sin more so that grace shall the more abound? The no right there is the strongest possible no, if I'm remembering correctly from Greek, and I have to get Logos software to check me, but that was a mega noito. That was a very strong no. What they might say at NASCAR, that was a heck no. That was a strong no. But then at other times, you know, am I going to do this? No, I am going to do that. There's transitional no's, there's potential no's, there's no not yet's and all of that. But in the English language, our language is fairly limited. I remember in like the third or fourth grade, the cute little girl who set down the table for me, I sent her a little note and it was, do you like me? And there were three options, yes, no, or maybe. Nowhere in that was the rip it up in front of all my friends and throw it down and stomp it on the ground in the playground. It was supposed to be yes, no, or maybe. But that's really our problem, that we've only got this one thing of no. But I think that from our perspective and from our standpoint, that there's some different versions of no. And so what I want to try to teach you is four or five different ways that people might say no that are not dead ends, but are instead forks in the road. And I will eventually get to mega noito as we go along. So let's set it up as you are trying to ask someone to do something that is in their best interest, that will help them grow spiritually, that will help them fulfill God's potential, and they offer you a no. Let's try to discern what kind of no is it. So the first one I would propose, and the way I wrote this down in my notes, is no question mark. No. Because, you know, if you're going to do a question, you put a rise at the end of the sentence. It's like the Anchorman. Remember that guy? Remember that movie, The Anchorman? You know, what was the guy's name in the movie played by Will Ferrell? I'm Ron Burgundy? And he puts a question mark at the end of the teleprompter. And his director chides him in the movie because he said, who put the question mark at the end of his name? Because we all know Ron's going to read the teleprompter the way that you wrote it. And he signs off, I'm Ron Burgundy. And sometimes when people say no, they mean no, no. And it's really no with a question mark. Because here's the thing. Sometimes people say no because they are confused. And sometimes a no is not a no, it is a request for more information. So a lot of times we ask people to take a big spiritual step, like to be baptized. And they say no to it. And what their no really means is, you haven't given me enough information. You haven't given me enough information. And so at that moment, the astute pastor, the renegade pastor, if you will, the above average pastor, says, okay, what do you need to know in order to say yes to this? Well, maybe, you know, they're really saying, I'm not convinced that I need to do it. They may be saying, I was baptized as a child and I'm now concerned about, do I need to redo this as an adult? Maybe they're saying, I need to learn a little bit more about the where, the whens, the hows, and the whys. And so sometimes you can overcome a no by giving them more information. And I can tell you that science has proven over and over that when the mind is confused, the safe option is to say no. And so people say no to what's confusing. Now, this is not about sermons per se, but I can't help but go down that direction. You know, sometimes in the middle of a sermon, there's such a fog in the pulpit that people say no to what you're presenting because it's confused. And the issue is confused, and you're not being clear about what you're asking people to do. So a big point is to figure out what questions someone might have, to figure out what answers someone might need, and address those before you ever make the request for them to do something. Because if you immediately jump to the request, if you immediately jump to the asking, they may not know all that they need to know in order to say yes. And I see this happen all the time. I actually see it happen a lot even in direct mail. And so someone sends out a direct mail, and then people don't show up for your Easter service or don't show up for your Mother's Day service or your Christmas Eve service. And we assume they said no to what you mailed to them. But actually, your direct mail piece was lacking the necessary information for them to say yes. It's amazing how many people send out direct mails and they never actually put their service times on it. And have you ever done that? It's amazing how many times people send out the direct mail and they forget to put the address of their church, particularly if their mailing address is like a P.O. box or something different. And so it creates this confusion in their mind, and we're saying they're saying no to Easter. What they're really saying no is to the confusion. I don't know where this is. We were talking in an earlier session about your website. People go to your website wanting to say yes, but they have to dig around and find out where you meet and what time you meet. And so they came wanting to say yes, but now they walk away so confused that they say no, and they never show up. And so sometimes it's that way when you present the gospel. Sometimes it's that way when you're asking people to take spiritual steps. Sometimes it's that way when you're asking people to be a part of a growth group. So one form of no is no, and it's an indication to them that they need more information. And at that point, you can start to backtrack and maybe ask them very gently, what would you need to know, or what information can I provide to help you say yes? And a lot of times, it'll be something very simple. A lot of times, it'll be something that you're very capable of asking, but you had no idea that that was the issue that was preventing them from saying yes. So there's no with a question mark. Another no that I have here in my notes is what I call the nah, the N-A-H. I know that doesn't translate so well for those of you that don't have English as your first language. But this is the kind of like, hey, you want to go out and grab some burgers after lunch? Nah, I don't think I really want to do that. It's not really a strong no. It's just kind of, it's not my preference. And here's what I think the N-A-H means. I'll say no to that, but I'm willing to say yes to something else. So this is the no that is no to this, but if you convince me a little bit more, I'll say yes to something else. You want to go out and grab some burgers after church? Nah. But you know, why don't we go get some Chick-fil-A? Nah, they're not open on Sunday. But the point is, they may say no to burgers, but they're willing to say yes to chicken. They may say no to lunch, but they'd be willing to say yes to Starbucks. And so they're not saying no necessarily to the thing that you're doing, but they would be willing to say yes if you phrase it in the way of something else. So the way I see this play out most often in church is somebody asks a question like, would you be willing to serve in our children's ministry? Nah. Now at that point, they're not saying no to you as a pastor, although that's how you take it. Oh, they hate me. They have rejected me. They do not care about their spiritual growth. They don't like me. But it's a nah. But they might be willing to say yes to something else. So what they're really maybe saying is, no, I don't think children's ministry is my thing, but if you can keep giving me enough options, there probably is something else that I would be willing to do. But most of the time, when you get this, nah, I don't think so, we just immediately move away and we start backing off. Instead of creating this cafeteria approach of other things that would be of equal interest to them or greater interest to them, we just stop. So it's a no to this. And maybe they would be willing to say a yes to something else. And this happens especially as a church grows and a church becomes compartmentalized. So most of us on the back of our connection cards, for example, we have opportunities for people to sign up to serve. At the Journey on any given Sunday, you can gain information about how to serve in our worship arts ministry, which is pretty big. It includes everything from audio tech to dance to singing on stage to the band. To even working backstage with the computers and lights and things like that. So people check it for worship arts. They can check it for serving as a volunteer, which is very vague. You know, is that volunteering on Sunday, volunteering at the church, volunteering during the week, you know, volunteering at the homeless shelter? It just kind of says, send me more information about volunteering. And then we have a third one that is, send me more information about volunteering and our age-graded ministries. Now, I'm fairly convinced that unless God's working in somebody's life, they wouldn't check any of those. And sometimes people check the one that they find interesting, and then the well-meaning, age-graded leader calls that person, and then in the midst of talking to them, even though they checked they were interested in serving in some kind of age-graded ministry, when you call them, they get the nah. Nah. You know, now that I've learned a little bit about that, you know, I don't think I like kids as much as I thought, you know. Nah. And what the well-meaning age-graded person will do is say, well, okay, keep us in mind. We'll have other opportunities coming up, and they'll hang up. Versus at that point thinking, you know, they checked that they were interested in volunteering. We're in sort of the volunteer world. Well, why don't I at least invite them to come and do something else that would be volunteering? So, you know, we have this volunteer night at the office. You know, can I give your name to Pastor so-and-so because he or she runs volunteers in this area? Or, you know, maybe you didn't mean to check kids because it's right next to worship arts and maybe you'd be interested in that. Or tell me more about what led you to check that, and then you could help them find the thing they could say yes to. Do you understand the difference in that? It's not a solid no. It's a no not to this thing that could be turned into a yes to something else. And so this is why sometimes, again, you have to ask, well, what was behind your thinking when you ask about it anyway? What was behind your request for information when you check this next step or you consider this? Because I don't know how it is in your church, but I have a lot of people who check next steps and they never follow through with them. Now, why would you do that? I mean, yes, there is that occasional weirdo and you got this person in your church who checks everything just to see, you know. It's like they're just testing you to see if you do it. But then normally, though, someone kind of has some interest in something or else they wouldn't check it. And so the very person who says no to the special Bible study you're doing on Wednesday night might say yes to being in a growth group or a small group over the next semester. The person who says no to serving on the worship arts team might say yes to serving as an usher or greeter. The person who says no to serving as an usher or greeter might say yes to coming by to volunteer at the office. And so you want to discern the nah, no to this, yes to something else. Here's another no. This one's easy to write down. I write it down as no, not now. This is the person who says no, but again, it's not a dead end. It doesn't mean that they're saying no forever, no for all eternity, no until the proverbial place of torment freezes over. This is the no, not now. And this is very, very common in our world. Would you like to be baptized next Sunday because you just made a decision last week to follow Jesus? Nah. Oh, I bet that person ain't even saved. I'm just going to mark them down as being lost, you know, still. But what they're really saying is really no to this Sunday. And by the way, just so you know, you should never give people one option when it comes to dates. Do you know the law of excluded, the law of excluded alternatives? Which means that when you ask someone if they want to be baptized, the question is not, do you want to be baptized next Sunday? The question is, as a new believer, would you prefer to be baptized next Sunday or when we do one in 6 weeks? So you give them the alternatives. And now the expectation number one is that they will be baptized, but now they're making a choice between one or the other, not between one or more dates, not this, not a yes or a no, but a this or a that. And so someone says, you know, would you like to be in a small group this semester? They say, no, you know, I got a lot going on at work. We just decided to homeschool our son or this or that. And then you can just immediately hang up and say, well, didn't get that one. Or you could say, well, you know, how about I go ahead and put you down for the next semester of groups? And they're saying, yeah, you know, you're right. I could start planning for that. I could start putting you down. And so you always have the next option available to them so that if they say, no, not now, you're ready with the next and the next and the next and the next. And you can at least get a mental assent, if not a firm yes, for the next time that something is being offered. And I think that's really powerful, to always give people choices. And just as a side note, you should go back and look at even like your emails or your letters that you send out to people when they request information. Do you just have, you know, one date coming up? Do you have only the next membership class on your website? Do you have only this option? And I know there's an argument that you want to drive people toward the one thing. And I think that works really well for like Easter. I mean, there really is only one Easter, but there's five service times or there's two service times or whatever. But when it comes to the spiritual growth points of being involved in a group, of serving, or going to an orientation, or going through a class, or getting baptized or membership, you know, give people options and help them plan. So there's the no, not now, I'll do it later. And then kind of related to that, I'm not going to say really anything about it other than kind of the related to that one is the no, not here, you know, which means I'm willing to do it, I'm just not willing to do it the way you want me to go about doing that. And I find that sometimes in relation to baptism in particular. If you've listened to my baptism seminar, you know, we get all excited at our church about the big beach baptism every year. And there are more people who want to get baptized at the beach than anything else that we do. People just tend to really like that. But there is always a small percentage of people that say no to that, and they're not saying no to baptism. They're not even saying no, not now. They're just saying no, not here. Because they're definitely afraid to get into the ocean water. They don't like the big crowd that we have at the beach baptism, and they would just prefer to be in a smaller, more private environment. And so I had someone come to faith in Christ one time, and they kept saying no to baptism, even though I could see they were growing. I could see they were moving forward, and they kept saying no. They kept saying no, and I kept trying to figure out, okay, what is that? You know, they happened to come from another religion, a background that was sort of not Christianity or even brought up in Christianity. And I kept thinking, well, maybe it's, you know, they think they're going to be disowned by their parents. And I kind of built all this stuff up. And what I just really eventually, through conversation, learned is the person had some surgery. And getting into water with another person was relatively tricky for them. And it was an embarrassment about what they would have to do to be able to do that. And so they kept saying no. I kept saying, well, how about next time? How about next time? But really, it was not here. And so we eventually orchestrated a private baptism, and it actually ended up being a very, very beautiful ceremony with just sort of the inner circle of people from their life. And again, I could have written him off. Nope, he's never going to do it. You know, he's hardened his heart like Pharaoh or whatever illustration we would have used. But it was a no, not now, or sort of the parallel to that, no, not here. Then there is another no, and I'm going to refer to this as the shy no. This is the person who wants to say yes, but they just need a little bit more persuasion. They like to know that you really need them. They like to know that you really care. They need you to go just a little bit beyond where you normally would go in order to get a yes. And I'm admittedly not all that great at this. I'm not all that great at trying to explain how much I really need you and how much contribution you should make and how talented you are. But some volunteers like this. And they're kind of giving you the no with a smile. You know, if this was on an emoji, it would be no with like the little smiley face after it. Because they're almost saying like, I'm almost there, but just tell me how great I am one more time. Tell me how much you like me just one more time. Just could you kind of personalize it for me? I know you just gave this great, brilliant, you know, invitation for it. But now just sort of woo me just a little bit. And sometimes, you know, you want to do that. Sometimes it is worth it. And I'm not talking about falling into pride. I'm talking about maybe just the person who really wants to know that you're interested in them. You really want to know that you care about what they have to offer. And so you kind of stretch it a little bit. You kind of go after it a little bit more. You kind of woo them, winning others over just a bit. And you kind of be on the lookout for that. And this kind of, for me, a lot of times circles around, well, the reason I'm asking you is because. Or the reason I wanted to make a special call to you is because. And I give them enough of the becauses, the becauses, the becauses. And none of these have anything to do necessarily with how much they give or anything like that. It has to do with, you know, you have been around for the church for a while. You are growing. I can already tell that your heart is into it. You found a place of service here at our church. Let's just settle this and make it less awkward when you fill out a connection card next time so you can say, I'm now a member. So I really want to put you and your husband down as members because you're already members with your heart. Let's just make it official that you're members on the dotted line. And so just a little bit of persuasion. And sometimes this works out well when you're moving someone back into ministry after they've taken a break. They just need to be reminded of what they can contribute, of what they have to offer. It also works really well when you're moving someone up a leadership ladder. So they've already said yes to one rung of service, but now you need to move them from being a leader to being a team leader, or from being a team leader to being a ministry leader. I also find this works pretty well when you're recruiting staff and you want to move someone into a paid position or a part-time position. They kind of give you this shy no because they just want to say, give me a little bit more. Tell me a little bit more about why it's me. And I don't like that. I'm usually just like, forget it. There's 15 more of you. And then I realize, no, I really need this one. You know, okay, there is a reason, you know, it should be you. Another one. Let's see. There's also the no, and I don't know how to word this one. I guess I might call this the no. Oh. This is the, I'm saying no to the length of the commitment that you're asking me to make. So they're saying no because you're asking me to do too much. You're asking me to do it too long. And so the no is to the timeline. So that's why it's got all those oh's, because it's just too long. And, you know, sometimes people say no to groups for this reason. You know, in our group system, not to get into teaching that system, in our group system, however, you know, we've learned that if we ask people to make a short-term commitment and then renew a short-term commitment and then later renew another short-term commitment, that we get a lot more people involved if they make a series of short-term commitments that in essence, and over the course of time, become just as long as if they'd made one big long commitment. But it's a whole lot easier to get them to make short commitment after short commitment after short commitment than it is to get them to make a long commitment. And we've learned that one of the reasons people don't make long-term commitments to groups is because of the length of the commitment. I sometimes chuckle when somebody says, I have a hard time getting people in my church to join a life group. Yeah, because other than marriage, there's no real positive connotation in our culture for doing something for life. I want to be in there for life. And people have all these fears, like, what if I'm in there for life and I don't like these people and it's full of weirdos? And I'm like, don't worry, they'll all be just like you. But it's for life. But then you say, you know, why don't you try it for 3 months? Okay, I can do it for 3 months. And then if you like it, you can sign up for another 3 months. If you like it, you can sign up for another 3 months. Or they, you know, people wonder why they can't get people to go through their membership class when it's a 16-week study. I mean, you know, I think Jesus taught the disciples in less time than that. It has to be 16 weeks. You know, they commit to a 16-week study. Or, you know, somebody's never served before in their life, and we ask them to sign up to serve for a year. I mean, a year? You want me to sign up and serve for a year? Well, is it possible that you could get more people to say yes if you made the barrier to entry shorter? And so, why don't you come and serve for a Sunday? Come and shadow someone for a Sunday. And then if that goes well, we'll sign you up for a 90-day, you know, trial membership. And you can serve for 90 days. And if that goes well, you can get involved in the regular season of the church and serve for a 5-month period or a 6-month period or whatever it might be. I have such reluctance in this area that when we hire a staff person, we don't even commit to them beyond 90 days. We have a 90-day out, even in hiring staff, because what if you don't like us and what if we don't like you? So, you know, you can think about shortening the commitment. Somebody says, well, you know, you want to be a part of our Thursday night volunteer team? You know, we meet every night, forever. Every Thursday night, forever. Thursday nights, forever. You know, as they run off, you know, in the other direction. But what if you say, why don't you come check it out this Thursday night? Then afterwards, we'll go out and get some burgers. Nah, okay, we'll go out and get coffee. And see how you liked it. See how I wove those together there. Thank you to the one person who caught that. And so they come and check it out this Thursday night. Then you have the conversation to see if they want to come and commit for the next month. Or maybe they just want to do once a month, not every week. Or maybe they're willing to fill in where needed. And by the way, this is a really powerful volunteer tactic when someone who's been serving faithfully but says they want to take a break. A lot of times when somebody's been serving faithfully and they want to take a break, they just really do need a break. But instead of saying no forever, they'd say yes to every once in a while. And so when a volunteer gets ready to leave an area forever, like you got a drummer, and they've served once a month and they've served faithfully, but they finally say, you know, I just need to take a break from drumming. And you say, boy, I really get that. Would you be willing that maybe once or twice a year, if we ever found ourselves in a bind, you know, to be our fill-in drummer? And they say, oh, yeah, once or twice a year. You know, if you ever need me just once or twice a year. Or, you know, if you ever get in that situation where the rest of our team, you know, somebody gets really sick and you need to call on somebody last night, I'll come fill in. Now, especially if you've got a culture where that's not abused and you really are only using them in that fill-in way, that sort of emergency way, they will say yes to that. And so they may be saying no to the team officially, but they'll say yes to being on the injured reserve list or whatever if you ever need them to fill in. And it's always good to have a few people like that kind of floating around. And if you've already got that yes from them and you find out on Thursday night you've got an emergency situation, you need a drummer or you know, an extra person in a children's area or an extra person as a greeter or a parking lot person or whatever, you know you've kind of got this team of people that are not on the team officially, but they're pre-qualified, pre-certified, and they're willing to jump in and they're happy to help. And sometimes that can also be a reactivation strategy. You know, somebody's been serving faithfully, they take a little break, which they should, you know, now to reactivate them, let them come back in and serve on a short term and be reminded of how much they like being a part of that. So I really love this, no, not that long of commitment. That's what Kelly told me when I asked her to marry me. She said, eh, let's just give it a shot. 22 years later, I've been able to get her to re-up for much longer. than when I originally got a rib. That's not true. That's just a little joke that apparently on the Friday afternoon, the last day of a conference, is not nearly as funny as it would have been if I'd done it on the first day. Remember the old joke? I think, Carrick, you'd like to tell this joke about, you know, in marriage, the longer you're married, there's always going to be a day where you wake up and look over at her and say, oh, no, what have I done? And then there's always going to be a day where she wakes up and looks over at you and says, oh, no, what have I done? And your hope is they don't happen on the same day. So anyway. Let's see. Not that long. Commitment, shy, no. Okay. Then here's two really important ones. A next to last no for my little presentation is sometimes you get what I call a spiritual no. And as funny as that sounds, I don't mean a God bless you, brother, go have something to eat, I'll see you later kind of thing. It literally is a no that in your spirit raises all kinds of bigger issues. And here's what I mean by that. You're talking to someone who has gone through your first-time decision process. You know, they've checked the first-time decision box. They're making some steps as a new believer. You get down to that point where you're talking to them about baptism, and they say no. And you run through this checklist. Okay, did I give them enough information? Are they saying no to this, but they're willing to say yes to a later date? Do I just need to persuade them a little bit? As it might be, is it maybe I didn't give them enough ramp-up time? Is it maybe it's not here, but they would be willing to do something else? But it's not any of that. But all of a sudden, the spirit inside of you doesn't find a resonating spirit inside of them, and you realize that even though they checked it, even though they've gone through some of the initial new believer follow-up, you really begin to sense the bigger issue here is not their disobedience when it comes to baptism. It is that you don't think they're a follower of Jesus. Because, as I say in the baptism seminar, it is very possible that some people don't get baptized because God is protecting you because they have not been converted. And we've all been there. We've all had that setting where you're sitting down with someone, you're trying to recruit them to be a small group leader, and everything on paper matches up, everything in the process matches up, but they say no, and kind of in your spirit, you're like, we might have just been saved from something right here. You know, there might have just been more going on in the spiritual world here. Or as we say in our culture, we think maybe God just protected us from that one. And sometimes, you know, this raises that deeper spiritual issue that can be discussed. Now, obviously, I just used two very serious situations. But a lot of times, there are more sort of normal spiritual situations, if you will, more pastoral situations that you can deal with. So you ask someone to serve and they say no, and you begin to sense in your spirit, okay, this is not necessarily an issue of salvation or even an issue of willingness, but I wonder what the spiritual issue really is. And so then you kind of take that as a fork in the road to discuss what the spiritual issue really is. And I've been sitting in that situation, and you have too, where the spiritual issue is they don't feel worthy enough to serve. And what turned into what you thought was a conversation to move someone on a ministry team ends up being a conversation about forgiveness, about accepting who you are in Christ, about realizing that God can use you even though there's still parts of your life that are a mess. And to tell you the truth, I praise the Lord for those kind of things. Because with apologies to Lon, who gave a great talk on the spiritual side of systems, I can get so caught up on the system that I forget that the system not only develops people and raises people, but it also creates spiritual needs inside of that system. And I have to be aware of that. And we have to navigate people through that. Someone says no to being a small group leader, and you try to finesse it and you try to figure it out, and your spirit's leading. They may feel like, well, they're not theologically adept enough. Now, in some ways, that's sort of a no, I need more information. But that can also be sort of a spiritual challenge to them too about where they are. Or they say no to being a part of a certain team, but it opens a door for you to talk to them about their daily habits or about their church attendance or about some other spiritual need they have in their life. And so we always want to be on the lookout for opportunities to pastor people in arenas that may be different from the thing that we're talking to them about. So they raise up an issue of unforgiveness when you're talking to them about being a group leader. You don't have to schedule another appointment to talk about the unforgiveness. Maybe the reason they got you're there in that appointment is so you could talk about this. So be very aware of this no that opens up, that raises a bigger spiritual need, either in your own spiritual discernment, your own heart of discernment, or just in the middle of that conversation. And sometimes it's simple as, you know, tell me more about what you're thinking. Tell me more about the thought process. Or, you know, as you've prayed about this and reached this decision, you know, what were the kind of things that you've prayed about? Tell me more about what you've considered or what you think God may be teaching you. So maybe that's no, but just let's back up. Where are you sort of in your spiritual journey? What are the questions you're asking God these days? How can I pray for you as your pastor? We can put that on the table. We don't have to talk about the thing I brought you here to talk about. You know, let's just talk about where you are. And maybe that's why God has brought us here. And whether that ever leads to a yes to the thing that you were talking about or not, it has led to spiritual progress, which is really what this is all about. Got it? Then there is the final no, which is the NASCAR Yale no. And it just literally means no. And they're just not going to do it. I mean, there is that. But look at how many things there were before we got to the meganoito. And what we do is when we ask someone, we automatically assume that that's what they meant. They automatically assume that they mean no with a big exclamation point, followed by another big exclamation point, followed by another big exclamation point. And that second exclamation point means I don't like you. And the third exclamation point means I don't like your church. And the fourth exclamation point means never ask me to do anything ever again. Now, there is a time when people would say no to that. And there is a time for people to say this kind of no. You know, they're not ready. It's not a right fit. They really, you know, don't want to do it. And sometimes there is a no that is given and you just accept it and you go on. But before you just assume every no is that, there are all these other no's.